It's time for The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cyclists, trails, travel, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. You can subscribe to our weekly podcast at OutspokenCyclist.com or through your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for February 26th, 2022. I hope you're enjoying some sunshine and good weather wherever you are. This week, I have one very interesting and savvy guest, someone who sees his business, which is e-bikes, from a perspective the bicycle industry might consider taking a page from. You may not be a business person, and you may not be super interested in e-bikes, but I think you would be hard-pressed to hear the conversation I have today with Don DeCostanzo and not say that it's a really fascinating look into a bicycle category from a completely unique perspective. Don grew up in the automotive business. He worked for a chemical company until it was bought out by a bigger fish, and he decided to become an entrepreneur in the electric vehicle business. Bikes, scooters, skateboards, and even a rather crude electric car. Between then and when the first Pedego store opened, a lot transpired, especially in the world of electric bicycles. Today, 200-plus Pedego stores later, Don shares his insights into how he sees not just his business, but the bicycle industry as a whole. And what might be most revealing? Unless you are a cyclist, you may not know anything that is going on in the traditional bicycle world, including the names of most of the popular brands, the components that are changing almost with every new cycling season, or even what gravel riding means. I'd like to offer a quick note about the second half of our conversation. At one point, I asked Don about how inflation might be affecting his business, and after he explains what has happened with tariffs, there will seem to be a non sequitur. I needed to take out some talk about pricing and margins as it was specific to a dealer network. So please just go with it. Hello, Don. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest today. How are you?
I'm great. And I'm delighted to be on your show, Diane.
Well, I am delighted to have you. I should have had you a long time ago, but right now is, I think, a good time because e-bikes are the happening thing. And I want to congratulate you. You were named Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year, Pacific Southwest. And are you really an audacious business leader?
Well, it took three times. The third time's a charm. So I was a runner-up 2 years in a row. The first year, I didn't even get anything. I didn't even get acknowledged. The second year, I was a runner-up. And then they have the finalists. So it took 3 years to do it and a lot of interviews. But I learned more in the process, I think, and it was worth it. So anybody who gets the opportunity to be in there, you get to talk to some phenomenal leaders. And I got to know some amazing people through the process because you go through this whole judging thing and all these judges are all accomplished entrepreneurs. So I've made a lot of friends from it and I'd do it all over again if they'd let me. But once you win, you can't do it again unless you go to nationals.
Well, there is that. It's not like your business doesn't cover a national area, right?
That's true. That's correct. But thank you for the acknowledgement.
Of course. So let's talk a little bit about your background. You didn't start out in bicycles.
No, I didn't. In fact, if you told me 20 years ago that I'd be in the bicycle business, I would have said, you're crazy. I don't know anything about bicycles. All I know, I remember about bicycles is the Schwinn Stingray I had, and then I upgraded to a Varsity and then a Continental. And finally, I got a Raleigh Supercourse. And then that was when I was 13, 14, and 15. And my family was in the automobile business and I chose to go into that. My family owned a chain of car dealerships. I worked in those. And I also ended up working for an automotive chemical company that provided products and services to automobile dealers. And I ended up becoming the president of that company in 1999. Worked my way up to the proverbial corner office after many years of hard work and relocations and all the things you do to sacrifice for the corporate world. And then 2 years later, it was acquired by a large industrial company and we didn't see eye to eye. So that was the end of my career and getting the corner office. And I became an entrepreneur They gave me a little bit of money and I went out and I bought another chemical company, built that up and sold it. And in 2008, I was 50 years old and I could have retired, but I was way too young. And I just fell into the electric bike business because I lived at the top of a hill and I loved to ride down to the beach, but I didn't love to ride back up that hill. So I'd heard about electric bikes and I bought one online from a company in New York that claimed that they were the largest electric bike retailer in the country. And they were in New York City, but they said on their website, believe it or not, there was a website back then, 2007, that their largest market was in California and they sold more bikes in California than they did in New York. And I thought that was a little backwards. Actually, that was 2006, not 2008. And I thought that was a little backwards. So I bought a bike from them. Everybody loved it. I loved it. It got me up the hill. It was a terrible piece of junk bike, but it got me up the hill. And I said, boy, if somebody did this right. And so I decided to open a retail store in California, in Newport Beach, which I did in 2007. It was 3,500 square feet. And I paid $6,500 a month for the rent. And yeah, I know it was a lot of money back then, but it was month to month. And in that location, I carried electric bikes, electric scooters, electric skateboards, electric golf cart, and even an electric car, the Zen electric car, Z-E-N-N, which never made it, but they gave it to me on consignment and I had it on display. And I quickly realized that there was really something to the electric bike. And that was in 2007. And then into 2008, there was a little bit mini energy crisis and gas prices went up and my business just took off like a rocket. But I was frustrated because the suppliers that were providing me electric bikes were providing me terrible bikes. They were crappy bikes and they couldn't service them. And worse than that, they didn't have any repair parts for them. When they broke, they would go tell me to take a part off a new bike to fix it. Like, you can't run a business like that. I couldn't get batteries. I couldn't get chargers. I couldn't get anything. I thought, wow. But at the same time, I learned that the customers really had a demand for them. And I learned two very important things that have carried to Pedego's success. The first thing is that men want to know how fast they go and how far they go. And women want to know what colors do they come in.
Nothing changes from electric to mechanical.
That may be true to you. But, you know, it's a funny thing because one day somebody walked into the shop and I was there Saturday morning. Now, this was a part-time thing. I was still running another company at the time, but I was there on Saturdays and Sundays, and I just enjoyed that culture of these people wanting to buy these electric products. And a guy bounces in the shop. He says, do you carry Trek? And I looked at him. I said, Trek? I said, what is that? I thought that was something you did. I didn't know it was something you bought. And he goes, no, Trek, they're the largest bike company in the country. I said, it can't be. I've never heard of them. I mean, I own a bike shop. I've never heard of Trek. And I went online at that time. I think it was AOL. And I looked it up and said, holy cow, they are the largest. How did I never hear of them? Then I found out that the second biggest company was Specialized. I never heard of them either. It was like, because I'm not in the bike industry. And I haven't owned a bike since I was 15 years old. So I didn't know these brands. And it dawned on me that there's an opportunity for somebody to build a consumer brand for electric bikes. So in 2008, I sold the shop and started Pedego, with the vision of becoming not the biggest, but the best electric bike company in the country.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. We have a lot to talk about. We're speaking with Don DiCosanzo. He is the CEO and founder of Pedego, P-E-D-E-G-O. We're going to get you to a local store if you're interested and to the website. It's pretty simple, pedego.com. So that's a really interesting perspective that you really didn't started in the bike business, which is probably a really good thing. Knowing what I know about the bike business and the way it's run, you came in from a much different place. So that's the beginning of Pedego. Who's your typical customer? And back then, who was your customer?
Well, our customer has been and continues to be Mr. and Mrs. Jones, who are in their 50s or 60s and even 70s now, that love to ride bikes, but most of them haven't ridden bikes since they were in their teens. They might've rented a bike. They might have bikes hanging in their garage upside down because last time they rode them, they remembered that it was way too much work. There's a romanticism that goes with riding a bike, but there's also the hills and the sweating and burning my legs and I can't keep up with you type fear that people have. So the electric bike overcomes all that. And I discovered very quickly. So the bike that I was most successful selling in my store was not one that I could buy. And at that time, there was just a handful of, there were just a handful of suppliers. And by the way, we were putting a 500 watt motor on the front, and we were putting a 30 pound battery pack on the back, lead acid, because that's all that was available. And then one day, somebody came in that had a lithium powered bike. It was Ultra Motors. And I said, oh my God, game changer, right? I go from 30 pounds to 8 pounds. And that changed everything. And that's when I realized that there was something happening there. It's the same thing that happened in the car industry. The lead acid didn't make it. It was the lithium that changed the game. But in this whole study, I was buying electric townies and electric cruiser bikes, and I was converting them to electric. So I would sell them during the day and make them at night. And the woman really liked the colors of the Electra, of the Townie and the Cruiser. So I became a dealer for Electra, and I began buying quite a few bikes. And so much to so that the then owner of Electra wanted to know from his salesperson how this person in Newport Beach was selling so many Townies when they could never sell Townies in Newport Beach. Nobody ever bought this. Well, how's this guy doing? And the sales guy goes, well, he's making them electric. And apparently you could have heard a pin drop in them. He's doing what? He's making them electric? We can't allow that. You go there right now, tell him to stop. He can't make our bikes electric. Why take a perfectly good bike and ruin it by putting a motor on it? So sales guy came to me, told me, look, I can't sell you bikes anymore if you're going to turn them into electric. I says, I'm an electric bike shop. I don't want your bikes, so I can't turn them into electric. I said, are you guys ever going to come out with an electric bike? And he said, never. I thought to myself, never's a long time. But I said, I think I got about a 3-year jump on. So I set my targets on becoming the Electra of the electric bike business. Honest to God, this is in 2008. I have it written down in memos and things like that. I'm going to become the Electra of the electric bike business. And by the way, the company's name is Electra. Okay. I thought there were electric bikes when I first looked at bike shops. I went around looking for electric bikes, and I thought Electra's world. I said, oh my God, somebody does have electric bikes. Turns out they're not. Just to close that quick little story, though, it's very important. 3 years later, almost to the day, Miley Cyrus is in People magazine riding her Pedego. And the caption is, Miley upgrades her Electra to a Pedego. Swear to God. You can Google it. It's online. It's still online. There's 91 pictures of Miley Cyrus riding her Pedego through Toluca Lake on her Pedego with that caption underneath the lead story. And I think that's when Electra decided maybe they should get the electric bike.
Yeah. So I can remember years and years ago, a friend of mine was, his family was in the Schwinn business in Florida, Ed Benjamin, whom I'm sure you know.
I know Ed. Ed, I met Ed in Taiwan in 2008 when I first started to decide to make electric bikes.
And I'm listening to him and he's talking about electric bikes, and this had to be back in the 80s. And I'm like, you know what, Ed, stuff it. You have no idea what you're talking about. But it did take a long time for his vision to really happen and happen the way it is right now. Let's talk about not only the organic growth of Pedego and how it's different, but how you decided to come up with the Pedego store concept, because it's very different from somebody just opening a shop and becoming a Trek dealer or a Specialized dealer or a Giant dealer. How does Pedego work?
Well, it evolved. I think Michael Dell said it in his recent book, but he basically says, you know, you just kind of play it by ear and see how it all unfolds. You know, you just go see how it goes. So we tried everything. We tried bike shops. I remember one bike retailer that put our bikes in and then he couldn't sell them. I sent a mystery shopper in. Mystery shopper found out that the sales guy, even though he had Pedegos there, wouldn't sell them. He told the guy he was too fat and he needed a regular bike. Honest to God, he hit him in the belly and said, you're too fat. You need an electric bike. I mean, you need a regular bike. He wouldn't sell them. The guy was in his 50s. Okay. And he had a big pot belly on him. And the guy told him, and I was just shocked by that. And the store owner said, well, yeah, you know, that's Fred. He's like that. He's not 29. He's never owned a car. So he thinks everybody should be on a bike. He doesn't like electric bikes. He thinks they're motorcycles. Like, really? Well, how are you ever going to sell these things? I just went and picked them up. So after getting beat up like that for 3 or 4 years, we tried scooter shops. We had home parties like Mary Kay type stuff. We had people, we had called it a neighborhood electric dealer. You could become a Pedego neighborhood electric dealer if you bought 3 bikes at retail that established you to be a dealer. And then you could sell the bikes to your friends and neighbors by demonstrating to them, and they would buy them. And it worked to a very small degree. But after they sold their friends and neighbors, it was kind of over. We really couldn't parlay it. Too expensive. And repair was the biggest issue. Who's going to fix it for them? And then in 2011, now we started the company in 2008, really started selling bikes in 2009, 2010. I think 2009, we sold 444 Pedagos, which wasn't bad for year one. And we were struggling to find our way in distribution. Finally, in late 2011, just before Interbike, a customer of mine came to me and said, look, I want to open a store in Huntington Beach and I want to do nothing but sell Pedagos. And I said, well, that's a very interesting idea, but no. He goes, what do you mean no? I said, you have to rent them too. He goes, oh, of course I'm going to rent them. Because I learned in my shop when I had it in Newport Beach that renting the bikes was the precursor to owning it. It's kind of like going to Costco and taking a bite, taking a bite of that cheesy bread. You buy the cheese and the bread. I took a lesson out of that. And a number of years ago, I rented a car in Arizona, and I never would have owned that car, but I rented it for 3 days, loved it, went home and bought one. Then my dad bought one because he liked my car. And then I bought a third one. So out of that one rental experience, I ended up buying $100,000 worth of cars. So we've applied that. So in 2011, we went to Interbike together, and Ed Benjamin was there. And I think he was with Ultra Motor at the time. It was very early in the bike industry, and there were almost no electric bikes. I mean, nothing. And the few that were there, their booths were empty. Like the bike stores all kind of crapped all over them. So he opened the first Pedago store in 2012 in Huntington Beach. It still exists today, Huntington Beach on 5th and Olive. He rents bikes there. He sells bikes there. He's got a great little shop there. He's done really well. And then he opened a second store in Corona Del Mar. And he said, I want to open a few more. I said, why don't you come to work for us and let's open 100? So he kept his store. He came to work for us in 2012. And he retired last year.
Who's this?
His name is Tom Bach. He was the guy who opened the very first Pedago store. And he helped us open 100. And now we've got other people on the team now. We've got a VP of business development. She's opened another 100 for us in the last 3 years, and we'll probably open close to another 100 this year. So it's growing at an incredible rate. And so it's different from any model in the bike industry, but it's more like a car dealership model because I came from that. And that's what I know. So we have sales, service, and parts. Parts is a huge part of it, right? Because you have to have the parts repaired. So we have a huge parts department here. We have a parts to every bike we've ever made. We have the parts to fix it. And the reason that I want to do that is because I want to make sure that when a customer buys a bike, he gets the part to fix it. So bikes we made in 2009, I can still fix today and have the parts and the batteries to fix it. Nobody else in this industry can say that.
That is so true.
Oh, it's sad. It really is. You go to these shops, and that's why the bike shops don't want to fix all these bikes sold online, because they can't get parts.
Right.
You go to any bike shop today, they'll either, no, I don't fix anybody's electric bikes, or I have some in here and I can't get parts from them. They're taking up too much space in my shop. Right. So that's a huge problem. I mean, that infrastructure to have the parts is so critical. And you can't ask a dealer to take a part off a new bike the same way you wouldn't ask a car dealer to take a part off a new car to fix a car that's broken. So the model that we have is it's a license agreement. They have to be dedicated Pedago. It's like being a Chevy dealership or a Honda dealership. You only sell that brand. You don't go to a Chevy dealership and buy a Honda. In the bike industry, it's very weird. I mean, there's Trek stores selling Specialized stores selling Giant said. Now, Giant tried the concept at the same time I did. In the year that we opened 10 Pedago stores, which was 2013, they opened 10 Giant concept stores. None of them exist today. The 10 stores we opened up are all still in play. In fact, we've had only a handful. We've only had one fail out of 200 some odd. And the person was undercapitalized to go in and not a good business person. But only one has failed out of 200, which I think is just an incredible number.
I was going to say, let's take a short break. And we're going to come back. I have so many more questions for you. It's going to just blow your mind. We're speaking with Don DiCostanzo. He is the CEO, the founder, and wow, what an entrepreneur of Pedago electric bikes. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We will be right back.
Children in poverty, each one unique, each one full of dreams. They're our hope, our future. They're the reason Children International exists. When the whole world changed, we developed new ways to reach children and families during these vulnerable times.
Tengo suficiente comida saludable.
Estoy sana y fuerte.
To learn more, go to children.org/help today.
We are back on the Outspoken Cyclist, and we're going to continue our conversation with Don DeCostanzo. It's just so great talking to you. I mean, it's giving me so much like hope for something, but not necessarily the bike industry as we know it, because I think the bike industry as we know it is changing very, very dramatically right before our eyes. So we were talking about how Pedego stores are structured. It is a licensing agreement, and only Pedego sales service parts. What about accessories? Can a dealer come up with other accessories, or do you supply accessories too?
Both. So we have our own line of Pedego accessories. We have phone holders, and we just came out with turn signal switches to back update, because we've just launched turn signals as part of the bike infrastructure. But we came up the switch separately for people who want to have an older Pedego and they want to upgrade it with new features. We have baskets and bells and locks and all the things you would expect. We usually try to find something a little more unique. We have pannier bags and basket liners and all the fun kind of stuff. Another page I took out of the Electra book. I was an Electra dealer. They had a great line of accessories. We now rival. It took us 10 years to get there, but we now rival Electra in the number of accessories they have, because they've done the best job I've seen of anybody in the bike business and offering accessories to the leisure buyer, to the recreational buyer. And that's kind of you asked earlier, you know, who's our demographic customers? We sell most of our bikes in pairs, to husband and wife, and they don't usually necessarily buy them at the same time. There's countless cases where the husband says he wants one, the wife says, I'll just pedal, and vice versa. And within a week or two, that goes away. So we say we sell bikes in pairs one at a time, because the other person doesn't realize the big benefit of riding an electric bike until they experience one. So a lot of what we do is different from the bike industry. We didn't know what the bike industry and how they did it. We just found that it was a little bit weird how that these stores weren't loyal to any one brand, and that there's no brands are up on the side of the store. And, you know, there's one here in Costa Mesa that's got a big S on the side of it. Okay. I drove by it for like a year. I didn't know what S was. One day I said, I wonder what that S was. And then I looked a little deeper in the window and there was some bikes. I said, that's a bike S. I never heard of it. Found out it's Specialized.
Sure.
I mean, I don't want to talk about arrogance, but that's arrogance in its highest level. They're in the bike business and they just put it like everyone's supposed to know. So it would work great if you were Nike, but you're not.
Right.
You can put the swoosh on the side of the building and you get away with it. You can't put a big S there. I thought maybe they were selling Superman attire. I mean, I just find it's really strange how the bike industry. And the other thing that I learned, I teach a class at both high school. In fact, I'm doing one this afternoon for entrepreneurs, and I teach one at the college level. And the first question I asked these 40 kids, students in the class. And I asked these 22-year-old graduating with a degree in marketing to name the first name of bikes that comes to their mind. Now, I've done this now for 8 years, 16 semesters. I get the same answers. I said, look, I'm going to go around the room. Think of that name in your mind and then tell me what that name is when I come around the room. What do you think 80% of the time the answer is?
Schwinn.
Right. And they're 22 years old.
Right.
Okay. Schwinn, 100%, 80% of them say Schwinn. What do you think the next one is?
It probably isn't Trek, but that would be the only other one I think of.
Huffy.
Oh, sure.
So then 80% say Schwinn, 15% say Huffy. Almost never do I hear Trek. I only hear from somebody who's a cyclist.
Right.
And occasionally, I don't think I've ever heard Specialized. I've heard Cannondale. I've heard names that don't exist anymore, like GT and a few others that were like, and I've even heard Murray, believe it or not. So, I mean, that's what we've got going on, that these people don't have any brand recognition. And I tried to dig in why, and I figured out that the bike companies only speak to their own.
That's,
you know,
right.
They spend all their money at Tour de France and all that. They're not trying to recruit anybody new into the business. If you don't watch Tour de France, you'd never know who Trek was. Even if you watched it, you wouldn't see it, because it's hard to tell who all these different brands are, and they don't mean anything. So I saw an opportunity to create a ubiquitous brand. The best book I've ever read is Shoe Dog about Phil Knight on building the Nike story. He didn't even like the name Nike when they came up with it. For a year, he hated it. It's just an amazing story. And yet, look what they've done. I mean, it's just amazing, because they built a brand in a category that had no brand recognition.
So interesting. I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head about the bike industry. It only speaks to its own. And it's always been a gripe I've had that the people, first of all, the people who have disposable income are not the people riding the Tour de France, you know, or even watching the Tour de France. And it's just such a tiny little slice of the pie. So let me talk a little bit about service. E-bikes are different. It isn't just replace a chain and cassette. So who does your service training, and how do you work with your techs?
Okay, so interesting question, because service training is going on right now as we speak. I could take you downstairs and you'll find a room full of people. From about 20 some odd people flew in. Every month we provide service tech training. And that happens with a 3-day class. We also have a in-field service trainer that spends 5 days at the new store when they open up to give them technical training. So they get it here on a global scale, and they get the detail, the actual, when the bikes arrive, our tech is there to help them put the bikes together and show them how they go together properly, how to adjust everything, how to get the customers. And typically that he sells a bunch of bikes when he's there to customers who wander in the store. So we've got a roving thing. But then the third and probably the most important element would be every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. we have a Zoom call that's a tech call with all the techs around the country. And we talk about known service issues, solutions. And more than half the time, the problems we have has already been solved by somebody in the field, because, you know, we don't see the problems right away. But our product development team is under the same leadership as the tech department is. That way, if there's a problem in the field, we identify it real quick and we can nip it at the bud before it becomes an issue. We had one of those such issues 2 years ago, and we stopped. We only had 300 bikes that had the issue, but we discovered it on one of those calls. We took a stop shipment on the bikes we had, and we found the 37 bikes that were in the field, and we immediately got the parts to repair it, and we saved ourselves a big headache by catching it really quick. So it's not just training, it's ongoing recognition of these technicians that are repairing the bikes. And electric bikes are far more complicated than a regular bike. And believe it or not, fixing the regular bikes, a lot of the consumers can do that stuff themselves. It's when you get to the electric components that's their problem. So that takes diagnostic, and it takes the right parts to fix them. And we have our staff all trained how to do that. And all of our store are also trained. So we have 210 stores now in the US and Canada. Somebody buys a Pedego in Cape Cod and they're on their way, they're in Canada or they're in Florida, they can go in any Pedego store. We're going to take care of it. And we offer a 5-year warranty.
I saw that. I think that's really remarkable.
You know, we were doing it anyway. We take care of anybody. Our customer service team knows that they have to delight the customer. And if a complaint comes to my desk, somebody didn't do their job. Guess what? No complaints come to my desk.
They know better. Don's going to spank him. Let me remind people again, we're speaking with Don DiCostanzo. He is the founder and CEO and hands-on operator of and owner of Pedego electric bikes. I want to ask you about supply chain and how that has or has not affected your stores and your product.
Well, Diane, I take supply chain very seriously, because we have 200 and some odd stores that are reliant on us, and probably 1,000 some odd employees that are in these stores that are reliant on us for their income. And if I can't supply them product, they can't be in business. So we have a steady stream of supply. We know there's been problems in the supply chain and we faced them, but it's like anything else. It's a circumstance. We chose not to participate. We chose not to have a supply problem. Now, we had shortage of certain high selling products. Yes, but we don't ever run out of product. We run out of certain models, but we've never in all this time of the pandemic and all the post-pandemic craziness that's going on, we've never run out of product. And we never intend to, because we can't afford to run out of product, because then our stores run out of product and then they're relying on us for their livelihood. I have a mutiny on my hands if I ran out. So we absolutely, we carry more inventory probably than anybody else in the bike industry. And we're kind of unique in that we don't have model years and seasonality. I come from the car business and I thought model years on a bike, what the heck for? There's nothing that different. So we have a continual product improvement thing, but there's no model year. So none of our bikes are obsolete. We have zero obsolescence. Zero. Whenever we their accountants come in and say, how can you have zero obsolescence? I said, everything we make, we sell. And we have not discontinued it, but one model since we started in business in 2009. And it was the folding bike that was a lousy product that we sold in 2009. We discontinued that. Since then, not a single Pedego product has been discontinued. We started with two models, then three, then four. We now have 18. We're launching six more in the spring. So we don't have, we make classic style models and we don't try to have model years. I think model years are the biggest problem for a retailer than you could imagine, because then somebody doesn't want a 2022 one when they can buy a 2022. Why would they?
Well, that is the whole concept in the bike business, is that get rid of the one you have so you can have the newest. Don't get me started on that. I totally agree with you. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. Let me ask you a little bit about inflation and how it's affecting your pricing on your bikes. I know your bikes start out at a really reasonable number considering prices of electric bikes. What's inflation doing to your system right now?
Well, inflation isn't as much of a problem as the cost of getting the bikes. You know, we make our bikes in Vietnam, China, and Taiwan. And we have to pay a duty on the ones that come from China. And interesting enough, because we do everything above board, even the ones that come from Vietnam, because the frames are made in China. And so we pay our clear duty on everything that we, you know, that we don't ever want. I don't ever want the government knocking on my door because I didn't pay the right taxes.
A recent article in Cycling Industry News said that Harley-Davidson made $41.3 million from children's e-bike sales across 2019 and 2020 and the first three quarters of 2021. That's a lot of money, and that's a lot of kids' bikes. Kids' e-bikes? Who's buying their kids' e-bikes?
Well, first of all, that article, I don't think it said that. If it did, it certainly misstated. That's not possible.
I reread it.
Well, then the person was wrong. Just because you read it doesn't make it true.
No. Well, that's what I'm saying. So what's going on?
Well, I can tell you, okay, a couple things. So first of all, it depends what you mean by kids e-bikes. So they acquired a company called Stacy, S-T-A-Y-C, I think. And they make a small little mini bike, if you will, that has a little motor on it for kids, kind of like a Power Wheels type bike. But there's no way it did that kind of business, because we have a couple of dealers that carried it for a while and it didn't sell very well. So I don't know what that's all about, but I think it's a lot of fluff. But anyway, back to your question. In certain states, California being one of them, there's no minimum age requirement for anybody to buy an electric bike. Now, we've never catered to that market because I always go fishing where the fish are. And the aging baby boomers, where all the money is. These 15 and 13 and 15-year-old kids don't necessarily have a lot of money. But that changed in the last year during the pandemic. Parents went out and bought their kids these electric bikes. And most of them aren't even bikes. They put pedals on them and they call them a bike. You know, my definition of a bicycle is that, yeah, it's got two wheels and pedals that actually work. And these bikes have worked, but you can't get enough. What's the word you use in the bike? You can't get enough pedaling. You're sitting too close to the thing. You can't get the bikes to pedal very well because you're too close up. So they ride around as scooters and they're calling them electric bikes. Well, you go to the high schools now here in California, they're everywhere. Everyone's got all kinds of bikes. I mean, wow. And these are 13, 14, 15-year-old kids. The kids that are, their parents are buying these bikes to get back and forth to school. And I think it's a great idea as long as they're being trained and taught about rules of the road and things like that. When someday they're going to get a driver's license, and nobody talks about dooring. Nobody talks about riding the wrong way on the sidewalk in the wrong direction. All these kids are riding these bikes and they're not pedaling them. And they got their, you know, a lot of these have two seats on them. So they got their girlfriend on the back. I mean, it's just, and they're not wearing helmets. I mean, just, so there's a lot of safety issues with the kids buying, but it's happening. It's going to happen. It's like, I just thought if I was a 13-year-old kid and I had one of these things, oh my God, the heck with the Schwinn Varsity and Raleigh and Supercourse and all that stuff, I'd have had an electric one and I'd have had a field day. And that's what's happening. So it's happening in California. We're convinced it's going all across the country. We make a product that's perfect for that market. It's our element. It's the perfect bike for that market, and we're selling a ton of them to that market. Something I never, 2 years ago, I never would have even thought existed, and it just came of age. We were fortunate we had the product when the market came around, not because we were smart, because we were lucky.
So I have a question about something that you just said, and that is kids may or may not know the rules of the road, may end up getting doored, that kind of thing. Do you do any training in your stores when people buy a new bike?
Yeah, so last year we started the program. This year we're going all in. We've got a very aggressive program. Our stores are all being trained on how to do classes. We're going to do we've got a whole safety program rolling out this year. Last year we just kind of tiptoed around it and said we're going to do it. This year we announced it at our dealer meeting in December. We're all in. In fact, it's my number one priority this year is to get safety installed, since we're in a very unique position in that we have 200 and some odd stores that can provide training on Saturday morning to everybody. And it doesn't matter whether you're 5 or 55. If you don't understand the safety implications of riding a bike, and an electric bike just magnifies that, you need to go to one of our classes. So they'll start in April, I believe, and we'll be running them continuously in our stores perpetually. Everybody who buys a bike will be offered a free safety training class that includes on the road training. So it's a written study type deal, and then you also have a program where you do road tests just like you would a car exam.
I think that's just one of the smartest things I've heard in a long time. I mean Brian and I have talked about that, because he has clients who have been clients for a long, long time who have purchased e-bikes recently. They said, we were told nothing. Been sort of trial by fire, even though they're good riders on a regular bike. There are subtle differences that they wanted to know about and were not given.
You know, it's our social responsibility to do it. It's if we sell a bike to anybody, whether it doesn't matter what age they are, we need to make sure they can operate it safely so they don't get hurt. If I can just save one life, then the program was worth it. And I say that it's just one life. That's all. If I could just say, but I'm going to save a lot of people from getting hurt and injured and all that just by the basic lessons. I'll tell you a funny story. I own an electric car. It's a surprise. I'm in the electric car and bike business. So I have a Tesla. And the Tesla has this deal. When you walk up to the car, the door opens automatically for you. Okay. So I'm out doing a film shoot one day. We're out doing it, and I'm kind of supervising it. And I ride by my car on my bike with my keys in my pocket. What do you think happened?
True, your door opens and knocks you off your bike, or tries to.
The door opened right in front of me. And thank God I was smart about dooring, and I was far enough away. My own car could have killed me. Could you imagine what kind of article that would be?
Yeah.
Electric car kills electric bike manufacturer because the door opened automatically. But right. That's serious. It woke me up about dooring. And then another time I was on a ride down in Blue Ridge, Georgia, and we were out for a Sunday afternoon ride. There were four of us. We went up to this. We were like kids again. We went up to this old tire swing and hung out there and had a couple beers, of which I had none because I don't drink beer. But we're riding back on this beautiful sunny day. I made a right-hand turn, and I hit some wet leaves. And that bike went out underneath me faster than you could say lickety-split. And last thing I heard was bang, the helmet hit the ground. And I'm convinced if I didn't have a helmet on here, I would not be here today. Because that helmet, I had my head was, all, and the helmet was cracked. I mean, it was a serious thing. You won't see me get on a bike without a helmet. Yet I'm on an industry call yesterday talking about bike safety and all that. And they're talking about whether or not we should require helmets or not. Of course we should require helmets. Why wouldn't we? I mean, I know that's a big issue, but
it is a big issue. And they do see that ridership tends to go down, but
I know, but that's not around. I told you said it like that's bullshit. So what? I mean, talk about self-fulfilling. Oh, somebody can die because ridership will go down. I call that like, oh my God, really? They say it there. You just said it. It's crazy. Ridership will go down. You don't have to force anybody to wear a helmet, but recommend that they do. You know, and someone says, well, you just want to sell that because you want to sell helmets. No, I don't want to sell helmets. I don't make helmets. I don't want to sell helmets. But
I have two more things I want to talk about. One is any legislation that's trending around e-bikes that is affecting your business, and whether or not there should be sort of standard rules about e-bikes nationwide.
Yes and yes. So let me address the first question first. In 2013, I was on a committee with the BPSA, the Bicycle Product Safety or Suppliers Association. I was one of 13 members of that committee. We worked together. We got some legislation passed in California called AB 1096. It passed in 2014. It was unanimously voted on by the House, 80-0. I'm sorry, the Senate, the Assembly was voted on the Senate by 40-0, one, and then the governor signed it law and became what is California called AB 1096. That has become the model legislation across the world. I'm still active on the thing. I think we're in 36 states. We have a common definition of what an electric bike is and what it isn't. And what it is it's a bicycle. Class one and class two are pretty much clumped in one. One has the throttle, one has pedal assist, and only go a limit of 20 miles an hour. That's the definition of an electric bicycle. And it's a low speed electric bicycle, not a motor vehicle. And that's the big distinction. When you get up to the 28 mile per hour bikes, those are in a different class because people want to ride on the street and go faster. And I get that. And we make all bikes. We make a class one, class two, class three. So I've got no axe to grind in any one of those categories. The challenge we're having is all these people making what we call an out of class bike, and they've dubbed them class four. Okay, there is no such thing as a class four. They're made up by people who are making illegal. That's what Simon Cowell was riding. That's what these Yahoo manufacturers are selling as they're really motorcycles. Now, my brother's the largest electric motorcycle dealer in the country. He sells zero electric motorcycles. That's a motorcycle. It's a dealer. They got a license. They have to have a motorcycle license. They have to follow the rules. There's this in-between thing that's causing a lot of challenges in the industry and with law enforcement because they don't know how to deal with them. And unfortunately, they're kind of ruining it for the rest of us because they're calling them e-bikes. Now, I went on publicly yesterday on a call with the group that we don't call these bikes anymore. We call them bicycles. They're electric bicycles. And we need to refer to them as electric bicycles. Now, here's my company called Pedego. And I called it Pedego Electric Bikes because I didn't know any better. If I knew any better, I would have called it Pedego Electric Bicycles because that's what we sell. So the motorcycle industry uses the word bike, and they've got a right to it because they are bikes. But we need to distinguish what a bicycle is versus a motorcycle.
Last thing, I'm not going to ask where your stores are located because clearly they are all over the country. But you said to me at one point that there are stores opening in Ohio if they are not already open. Where can people go to find out if there is a Pedego store in their neighborhood? And if not, or maybe somebody's even interested in licensing and becoming a Pedego store, how would they do that?
Okay, well, everything's on our website. To answer your first question, if you just go to our website and say, find a store, type in your zip code, it'll tell you all the ones on a map to tell you all the ones that are around here. I think it'll show the five closest. I think we're in every state. Sioux Falls, South Dakota is here getting trained today. I think that was one of the missing ones. Maybe we're in North Dakota, but Ohio, we've had two stores, but as you know, Ohio's laws were kind of slow to come around and adopt the three-class legislation. So we're not very strong in Ohio. New York was the same way. So we have a store in between Cleveland and Akron in Peninsula in the state park there. We have a store. He's got a satellite location. I can't think of the name of the town it's in, but there. We're opening Cincinnati. We're open Maumee. I'm not sure how to say it. Maumee, M-A-U-M-E.
Maumee. Yeah, Maumee. That's up near Toledo.
And we're open Marymount, and we're also in Sandusky,
which is by Cedar Point.
Yeah, there's one. So we're coming to Ohio. Watch out. Watch out. Working our way through all the different states. I'm trying to think if there's any more in Ohio that are coming up on the list. But we're all over the country, and we're in Canada as well. We have 14 stores in Canada with five more opening this year. So of 19 in Canada. We started the year with about 200. We've opened, I think, 12 or 13 already this year. We expect to open between 60 and 70, maybe as many as 100 this year if the momentum keeps going. Most of our store owners are not entrepreneurs. Very few, if any, came from the bike industry. The bike industry people, we've had bike people that try to open up Pedego stores and it just doesn't work.
No. Now, if you have the mindset of a bicycle dealer and the way bicycle dealers work, as opposed to the way business works, you will not succeed, I can see, in your model.
We've tried it with people who we thought, Diane, we really thought it was going to work, but they just don't. We prefer people who have no bike experience. And that's okay if they don't have any business experience, because my proudest accomplishment since starting Pedego is making all these people entrepreneurs that weren't. Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur, but not every, and we have all the lessons how to do it. We have all the training. We have a stepping thing, right? We step them through the checklist, just what to do. Because some of them that are accomplished business people, they love the checklist because it helps them. Those that aren't have no idea what some of the stuff is. And then it's explained what it is and how to go about getting it. So if somebody wants to become an entrepreneur, this is a great opportunity. And if we talk about the industry growth, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's just beyond comprehension. We grew last year by 80%. We're on target to do that again this year. We grew the year. We used to grow 30 or 40% a year before pandemic. Now we're growing at 80% a year.
Even 30% is a remarkable number.
Right, right. And by the way, we're not doing it by stealing from competitors. The market's growing. We've got three. When I started, there were five competitors. Four out of five are gone today. Today, there's 350 people who claim they sell electric bikes, but 99% of them are online people. The best advice I give to any of your listeners is to go in and test ride the bikes, try them out before you buy them. Don't want to buy online. We have so many people lined up at our stores that say, oh, I bought this bike online. They won't take it back, but it doesn't fit me or it's broke. I can't get parts for it. I can't fix it. They line up. Those are what I call starter e-bikes. And I'm thankful for them because they're getting people into the idea that it's a cool electric bike. Just like me, I bought a piece of crap. It got me into the whole industry. The crappy one, I don't remember what brand it is, but it doesn't matter. I don't have any more. But now I'm in the quality electric bike business.
Great way to end. Don, thank you so much for talking with me. This has been fascinating. Don DeCostanzo, he is the owner and founder and CEO of Pedego, PEDEGO.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane.
My thanks to Don DeCostanzo for joining me this week. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I found it very enlightening. I'm working on some interesting topics for upcoming shows and hope to bring you a brand new episode next week. If you're wondering why there haven't been as many consistent shows of late, the explanation is pretty straightforward. With the continued issues of the pandemic, many events, tours, even projects that we often report on have all been postponed, and some have even been canceled. Fewer books have been available to review, and many of the topics I regularly follow have been scant, to say the least. As things begin to open up again, I think there will be many more interesting people, topics, and projects to bring to you. I would also like to acknowledge all of you who have been sending me ideas. I've followed up on many of them and truly appreciate that you share them with me. Frankly, it makes my life a lot easier. Finally, I'd like to end this week with a note on a wholly different subject. I know it affects us all, and I wanted you to know how profoundly sad and upset I am by the events of this past week. Of my four grandparents, three were born in what is now Ukraine, at that time Russia. The fourth was born here in the U.S., but his parents, my great-grandparents, were also from Russia. They fled the pogroms to come to the U.S., at the turn of the last century, and by some miracle, they survived and thrived here in the United States. What is happening now will, I believe, have profound effects on our lives, effects that we can barely begin to imagine. I wish I had that magic wand that would allow us a swift and just end to the conflict. My heart is breaking. I know it is a sad note upon which to end this week's show, but it is a sad state of affairs. Until next time, please stay safe, stay well, and take care of one another.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We welcome your thoughts and contributions on our Facebook page, or visit OutspokenCyclist.com to leave a comment on any episode. We will be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app and you'll never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.